The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, 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 what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 578. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Perfect. Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
And Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
Manny, impeccable timing. I was like, yo, for fun, I'm just going to start the show. I'm like, this guy just fucking left. This motherfucker walked away.
I was gonna I haven't eaten yet, so I was getting a little my food on. So.
Yeah, but like the way you came back was smooth, you know. So yes, we are back with another one. Hopefully everything goes right tonight because I am actually using a MacBook to stream this show, people. And here's the funny thing: if I would have made this statement 5 years ago. Or even 4 years ago, people were like, yo, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? Windows for life. Nowadays, like, oh, yeah, I get it. Nobody likes Windows anymore, you know?
Now, since they're losing it all, you know, I've heard they're making all these announcements that they're essentially going to move back to domestic, applications as opposed to having them run online. I'm like, yo,
The web wrapper stuff, miserable failure. I mean, even Explorer attachment, all these problems is use web wrappers on like their apps and not native. It's screwing everything up. Apple's still.
It's ridiculous. So since I am
Are they going to fire Nadella?
guys, if you see or hear any fuck ups tonight, please let me know because this is kind of a test. This is a test. If you see anything, any elements moving around during the show, that's me just adjusting shit. This is just more streamlined for me. I only use my PC mostly for Throwdown and Monday and Friday when I work from home. Right. And, very rare I do PC gaming and keeping it real. This last month when I had to review Crimson Desert for 2 weeks, playing it every night, plus having the heat on because it was so cold. Yo, my shit went up. I'm not going to give you the number, but it went up by almost $100. I'm like, nah, son, this shit's got to change. The only mess up, and you guys will probably notice on the stream, is that I'm backward because this version of Discord doesn't play nice with the other software I had. But even though it's Logitech, which is weird. I'm like, you play good with I'm using another Logitech program for this. And the other thing I want to say, before we move on, and Carlos, you'll find this interesting. Even 2 years ago, a lot of the apps that I used for, my Windows were not available on Mac. They're available on Mac. I'm like, I got everything I need for Throwdown is available. It's crazy. Wasn't that way even 2 years ago.
Yeah, you can do Audacity, OBS, all that stuff.
Again, all the Logitech shit. Fucking Elgato, that's in there,
Elgato.
Razer is kind of supported, but isn't. I could download the software, the Synapse, but it doesn't recognize this headset. But it still works regardless. Although the dongle wasn't working for this, so I just used Bluetooth, which is fine, that's the tech down for you guys. Let's get into it. This is it's kind of funny because this week I had off, so I haven't really been checking the news, right? So I go into the Discord, shout out to the Discord gang, because I get most of my news from you. And I'm like, oh shit, I didn't miss anything. This was a slow week, a couple of little things here and there, but nothing too huge, but we'll go through it. All right, to start off here with the Xbox Game Showcase 2026, people, homegirl, Asha Sharma took to Twitter and she announced that like every year we will have another Xbox Game Showcase. Basically, the replacement for the E3 show, And it's going to, so what's going to happen, and I'm just reading this off the Xbox Wire. Xbox Game Showcase 2026 followed, this is the interesting part, followed by Gears of War E-Day Directs. That's interesting. June 7th and Xbox Fan Fest returns. By the way, Carlos, I probably asked you this shit last year, but I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
You want to stream this? It's a Sunday. May as well, right?
Let's do it.
I guess that's the question. Did we stream this last year, right?
I don't think so, because it might have been during the week. I mean, they usually do Sundays during E3, but I don't think they did last year. Could be wrong.
Well, I feel like I've asked you this every single year. Yo, did we stream this last year? We probably did.
Because the only one we do for sure is the Game Awards. That's the one that's always consistent.
1 p.m. Eastern on us. Yeah, we're live streaming this shit for sure. We'll do it.
Let's do it.
Do it. All right. Anyway, so let me read this real quick. The post is kind of short. It's time for another look at the future of gaming. Oh, the year of AO. Carlos, this is it. This is the year of Xbox.
This is it.
You know, it's time for another look at the future of gaming. Xbox Game Showcase 2026 will air on Sunday, June 7th, starting at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. UK time. Shout out to Brian. It will be followed immediately by a deep dive into the return of Xbox's most legendary franchises in the form of Gears of War E-Day. Oh, boy. We'll begin the day with our annual Xbox Game Showcase, including first-party games, looks, and huge news on upcoming titles from our first-party studios across the Xbox family, as well as our third-party partners around the globe, from the biggest franchises to soon-to-be indie darlings. Immediately following the showcase, we'll go even deeper into one of the games coming to later this year directly from the team behind the Gears franchise, the Coalition Studio. Gears of War E-Day will take players into the start of Emergence Day, offering new details, gameplay, and insights about the huge anticipated origin of the Gears of War saga. Cool, I wonder what Adam thinks of this. To help celebrate the Xbox 25th anniversary, 25 years, we're excited to bring back Xbox Fan Fest at Showcase. This year's experience will include a look back at the last 25 years alongside a forward view of what's next, and some, I guess, they have a contest going on. Oh, for a chance to attend. Okay. I'm guessing it's going to be taking place there. You'll be able to enjoy our June 7th double feature. They just list all the streaming things. So, yeah, what do we think? You know, Xbox, is this, it, like, I know we say that it's going to be their Xbox, but I guess the real question is, like, you know, do we expect anything new? Like, do you think, you know, Miss Sharma is going to bring any new energy to this deal? You know, like, what do we think? You know what? Go ahead, Manny.
I don't know. To be honest, it's all just whatever leftovers that Phil had. So what is he going to add to that? I mean, okay, it's all a bunch of stuff he already set in motion already. So to be honest, I think the only thing we're really going to see is just the change of the forward facing person. But all the stuff that we see, I think it's going to be interesting, but I don't think it's going to be anything earth shattering.
Yeah. Rich, what do you think, man?
Rich, will you be there?
Yeah, that's right. Which will you? Yeah. Actually, that's a good question. Yeah, we can hear you. Yes. Will you? I'm going to assume you're actually going to be there at this thing, aren't you?
Well, that's a very interesting assumption. Well, I will say this. Yes, I will be going to Summer Game Fest. This is going to be an in-person event, so I will definitely try to get into it. It's still early, but I'm pretty sure I can get into it because the last time they had an in-person event with Xbox around the same time, I was able to get into that. So fingers crossed. But a few things I will mention very quickly about all this. First and foremost, the other news was that the Fan Fest, they're actually going on tour with it. So they will have it in LA, but then they announced they're going to be in Germany for Gamescom. They're going to be in London. They're going to be in Mexico City. They're going to be in Seattle around PAX. They're going to be in Australia, Tokyo, and Toronto. All this is all happening throughout the year. So, because they made that announcement a day after they announced this event. So, I know that Carlos said that he is a huge fan of Miss Sharma. She is trying to, you know, get everybody on her side. But as Manny pointed out, a lot of this stuff will be stuff that Phil and the team were already working on. So hopefully people will remember that when they see all this of what they show at this showcase. The only thing that I will add is that I will say that the only good announcement I heard this week is Gears of War E-Day. So, yes, I was excited when I heard that because now, and I'm glad that they're putting it, having this separate showcase, because normally every year when they have a showcase, that is an indication the game is definitely coming out. Last year, it was, I think it was Outer Worlds 2. The year prior to that, it was the Call of Duty game, the other Call of Duty game. That's not the point. One that flopped last year. So this means this game is definitely coming this fall. So I'm happy. But yes, I definitely need to see more because we haven't seen nothing since that trailer that they released several years ago. But yeah, looking forward to it. And as for what to expect at the showcase itself, I have no idea. We'll see more of Fable, I guess, because that's another game they said is supposed to be coming out this year. Of course, Halo. And yeah, that's, I don't know what about anything else new because I only know about the stuff that they said for sure is coming this year. But we'll have to wait and see what else they have planned.
Yo, Rich, is this...
Yeah.
I always forget about these things, but is E-Day supposed to be multi-plat for day and day, or is that not the one?
They did not announce that. I'm about 1,000% sure it's going to be because that last Gears of War game came out on PlayStation 5 last year. And I think they did that intentionally so that they can get people excited for this game. But again, we have to see because, again, Sharma says, hey, we need to have more games on Xbox. So this is going to be a test to see whether or not they're going to make this multi-plat or maybe a timed exclusive. I don't know, but I'm sure it's going to come to every platform if I had to make a guess.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Go ahead, Carlos, what do you think, bro?
I'm curious to see what they'll announce. But if I were to speculate, I think they'll just, you know, rehash a lot of the games that we already knew were coming. You know, the Fables, the Gears. Maybe we'll get some Forza stuff. Has the Horizon, the Japanese one, come out yet?
That's supposed to
come out this year?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't have this in the show notes, but you know, somebody already broke embargo on that shit. So.
Of course.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
No, I just was it a very influential person?
Yes, you could say influential, you know. Anyway, go on.
I just want to say, yeah, I need to hear that story later off air. But yes, continue.
Yeah, I think we'll get the hits, you know, the usual hits from Xbox. Hopefully we get some surprises. Maybe we'll get a Kojima sighting. You never know. Maybe he'll bring Jordan Peele, or maybe he'll bring Key. Maybe he'll bring Key into the...
He'll come through the PT door.
Yeah, maybe he'll do that. But as far as anything else, I can't really tell what Microsoft has up on their sleeve, if they have anything at all. Maybe they'll just, you know, fill it up with a whole bunch of various third-party/indie stuff that, you know, they usually use. But you know, I'll keep my hopes a little bit up just because I feel like even though, you know, there's a lot of, you know, opinions about the new change in what's it called, in management, the new regime change, I'm pretty sure most of the times whenever a new regime comes in for anything, it feels like they always try to do their best at least the first time around.
Yeah,
like they are, or at least they, you know, try to throw everything at everyone, at, you know, so they can impress, do a good first impression. So we'll see if that happens. And I'm looking forward to streaming it for you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anybody else have any thoughts on what may be actually, let me read some of this on some of the comments here. So I think Asir Nuffer is over here making jokes. Remaster Lost Odyssey and the Transformers game from 360 era. That's not going to happen.
Was that War for Cybertron?
Maybe. I don't remember. He says it would
first party.
No. It would be funny if they release Xbox, PlayStation, console. That's not going to happen either. But yeah, anybody?
I have a question. Yeah,
why is it?
What is this a question show? If you were to give it a percentage of what's the percentage they'll actually unveil Helix during this press conference? What would you guys give it?
that they'll reveal it at this shit?
At least show the console. Maybe not give it the specs, or maybe not do anything like that. Just show the shell of the console.
I'm going to say... go ahead, Rich, you first.
Oh, no, I want to hear what you have to say first, Tony.
I'm gonna treat this as one of those tests. Like, the first thing that pops to your head, 5% chance.
Mm.
I think it's very low. I think Jeff Keighley may be saving that for another one of his shows, if you know what I mean.
Excuse me? Mm-hmm. His vision?
Yeah, his vision is right. His
vision.
Yeah, Rich, what about you? What do you think the chances are of them showing Project Helix?
Well, I think you hit it on the head, Tony. I think we will probably see a concept, or they'll do this thing. Well, let's show you guys just a sneak peek of the future of Xbox. Maybe you'll see a game or whatever, something supposedly running, or you'll see people talking about, yes, the technology is amazing. And then you'll see something with AI, everybody will get angry. And then, but I think, that's going to possibly be, the reveal will probably happen at the Game Awards, like the full reveal, just like they revealed the last console they had there. But they are going to talk about it because they want people to be on their radar. One comment I do want to make, though, since Carlos asked that question, let me ask you guys a question, because clearly everybody knows that now the Xbox Showcase is also the PlayStation Showcase. So what is the percentage that you guys think that Microsoft may try and get a Grand Theft Auto 6 trailer at the Showcase?
Oh, excuse me? In this economy? Yeah, right. Yeah. because the thing, that's a tricky question, because Rockstar really plays by their own tune. You know, they don't have to follow anybody. And how much is Microsoft willing to spend on that? You know, because I know what you mean. Like, they had, remember Peter Moore, right? The GTA 4 sticker. It's a sticker, not a fucking tattoo. Let's just be honest. I don't know. I think that's I'm not going to give a number for that, but I think it's very low. I don't think that's going to happen. That would be crazy, though. What about the rest of you guys? What do you think?
I think I would give it maybe, I'll give it a 10%. Just for the mere fact that Microsoft has enough money to pay Rockstar reveal this in their showcase. But to be honest, these showcases don't really hold as much gravitas anymore. You know, like E3 press conferences where they try to win the press conference. Like, Sony won the press conference, Nintendo won the press conference, or whatever, Microsoft. So I don't think that's the case anymore. So I don't think they would... spend to get that trailer in that conference, which is the only way I think Rockstar, whatever, will give them a trailer to them to show, is if they pay them a good price. So Microsoft has enough to buy it, but I don't think they will.
Yeah, I don't think so either. All right, go ahead, bro. What do you think? What do you think yourself, Rich? To answer your own question.
Just a quick comment. No, I think you guys made a very good point. I guess what I do expect, however, is that there's going to be a game in that showcase that people are going to be interested in and talking about. Because I recall when I went back to the previous in-person event they had, the game they showed that everybody was talking about was Expedition 33. And, of course, we saw what happened with that game last year. So I'm curious to find out what that game is going to be. It may not be a major AAA game. It may be something else. But I'm just curious to find out what that
game is. Yeah. All right, anybody else want to jump in on the
Shadow Drop?
Yeah, anything else you guys want to say about the Xbox Game Showcase? All right, if not, we shall move on. Let me just double check something here. Okay, good. So this is interesting. As a matter of fact, if any of you guys, showed up last night when Manny and I were doing a little test here, we kind of briefly mentioned this, and we're like, yeah, we should talk about this on the show. So obviously, the Crimson Desert situation where the reviews aren't exactly lining up with gamer expectations, right? A lot of places, and I'm including myself in this one, didn't play the full game because it's just so long, right? But now, IGN writer who wrote the review for IGN proposing something interesting, which is kind of unheard of. So I'm reading this tweet from Pirat Nation. Travis Northup, the IGN reviewer who gave Crimson Desert a 6 and Marathon a 9, is asking his editor for a re-review. He is busy getting into fights with people on X about his scores. He eventually concedes that Crimson Desert deserves another review and claims to have asked his editor for another crack at it. Interesting. Rich, I want to start with you first. You know, what do you think about this? Obviously, as a longtime game reviewer, like, do you condone re-reviewing a game?
Well, that is a phenomenal question. And let me just say this right off the tip of it all. I happen to know this reviewer because I met this guy when I was at GDC last year. And normally, well, we were talking about the review process. You know, we all review games. Yeah. Normally, he reviews the games that they might be mid or they might be bad. So I did not know he was going to be reviewing these games. So when I heard about this, I said, oh, well, that's very interesting. First and foremost, I will say this. We know that this Crimson Desert game has had a series of patch updates. You know, the team has been very responsive to updating the game when they see that there's an issue or the community feedback. They've been very quick to do that. So I could understand why somebody would want to revisit the game. But I feel like that is the whole point of the review in progress, because what IGN normally does is they do a review in progress, then they come back and then they give a final score. When I saw the review in progress for the Crimson Desert, it was the same exact score as it was for the final review. So that's why I say, I don't really know if I could understand wanting to do a new review, or maybe you just want to have another writer take a crack at it instead, because they may have a different perspective. But to be honest, it is a very busy time right now with all the stuff that's coming out in April. We know a lot of these websites, they're focused on traffic and they want to get stuff out as soon, because they already know all this stuff coming out, IGN, all these big outlets, they're going to want to be in the front and center covering all these other games. So I don't know when they would make time to really get around to this review. But sure, I think it's totally fair to have a different opinion. I believe, if I recall, as far as the Coalition is concerned, there was a game that came out a long time ago that we had our very good friend, Mr. Charles Singletary, cover.
Shout out.
It was a game that, yeah, shout out to him. It was a game, I'm trying to remember the name of the game, but I know that you and him both got into it because you didn't like the game, but he liked the game. And I think we did something where he wrote something on it and you wrote something on it. Maybe I'm confusing who else was involved in that, but I think it's okay to have different opinions. But it's one of those games. It was this first-person game. I forget the name of it.
I know what you're talking about. It was the game that popularized walking simulators. Exactly what you're talking about. I'm forgetting the name, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Was it Dear Esther?
I'm not sure.
Or everyone is going to the rapture?
No, it's definitely not that. But I remember even our friend... One. Yep, go ahead, man.
The other one, the one with about the girl.
It was about the girl, and she, you know, her parents Firewatch? Left on a vacation. No, it wasn't Firewatch. Although it was that, wasn't it? Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, but there was another walking simulator that I actually got into not a debate, but I had a disagreement with David Jagano about. Tony doesn't like these fucking games. it was Firewatch with Charles, but there was another one that I also read for the Coalition that was also walking simulator that David Jagano and I were like, yo, what the fuck? You know, he threw some shade at me in the comments. He was like, oh, you say this is barely a game, but you use the word game several times in this review. I'm like, okay, bro.
Yo, Tony, ask Brian. That's Brian.
Yeah, Brian, what game am I talking about?
Either it's Going Home or Gone Home.
Gone Home. Yeah.
It's Gone Home.
And Brian, the game at the end, you learned a twist, was for modern audiences, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. I remember that game. I got all the trophies in that game.
Yeah. So I said that in my review, too. I'm like, who cares? But this was before, you know. Before, you know, it happened, if you know what I mean. Anyway, Rich, continue. That was a fun diversion. Yeah, Gone Home and Firewatch. Yeah, anyway, go on.
Oh, so yeah, no, that was a good diversion. But no, I was just going to say, I could see why somebody would want to get another opinion on the game. Because, again, I have not played Crimson Desert. So I don't really know. I see that it continues to sell. I think they've now sold 4 million copies. So clearly the changes are working, because there are people that either they've already purchased the game or they are purchasing the game because they're seeing that it is starting to improve in certain areas. So that's good for them. But yeah, I think it's totally fine if people want to have another opinion or talk about it at a later point in time. I just don't know when they would do that because it is a very busy time right now with all these other games that are about to drop. So we'll see.
Yeah. My thing is, my problem with this is, I don't mind a re-review, but literally 2 weeks after you reviewed the game? I don't know about that, man. That sounds a little too close to me. But I will say, you know, and I'm not trying to defend this guy, obviously, but I do think, you know, like dogging him for liking Marathon and not this game is kind of silly. Like, yes, Marathon is a bad game, right? But maybe he likes it. You know, let's just be honest here.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna dog. Yeah, general, go ahead, Manny. Yeah.
In general, you're still dealing with people's opinions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if he liked that game over the other one, so yeah.
Yeah, and I will say, yeah, Crimson Desert is the epitome of an anti-journalist game. Because motherfuckers don't have time to play a game this big. Bro, there's a part in this game that, like, there's literally, you could literally stand there for days watching dudes carve a statue. Like, that's the level of, like, you know, detail that goes into this shit, you know? Were you going to say, Manny?
But also, like, I would also say this is also the fault of the developer themselves, where they were saying you need to pay over like 30 hours or something like that in order to really be able to review this game.
Yeah,
I get it that they might be right, but at the same time, concerning how long they actually gave you to play that game.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing:
you could,
if you're a dedicated game reviewer, you could meet that deadline. But by the way, it was 50 to 80 hours. If you have a 9-to-5 job, that's difficult. Like me, I managed 30, not because I was being lazy, it's because that's all the time I could realistically give to it. You know, obviously you could argue, hey, if you're IGN, you should make the time. I get it. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to dog him for that. But I will dog him for talking shit on X. Like, dude, let your review speak for itself. You don't have to defend yourself, call people names. You don't need to do that shit. It makes you look stupid. That I don't condone, obviously, you know. But at the same time, it is interesting, you know. The re-review. So, you know, maybe IGN will do the review, but what they should have done, and Rich, I agree with you, have a review in progress. That would have saved you so much, man. They've done it before. I don't know why they didn't do it this time, you know? Go ahead, Rich.
Oh, no, I was going to say they did have a review in progress.
Oh, but, for this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they did. But okay. It was the exact same score. It was, if we had to score it, That's why. Yeah, I said I would not have updated that until I was for sure. After I saw they were doing all these updates, obviously you couldn't have known that. But I do agree. But hey, listen, I don't know if they have the time to go back and do that. But I will say, if an idea that they could do is, if they want to talk about the game, just save it for later in the year, because we all know when you get down to the end of the year, people are going to want you to reflect and talk about stuff that came out this year. That's when you can revisit at a later time and talk about this, when there's not too many other games coming out. But it is what it is. I will say, once again, I haven't played the game, so I don't really know what's happening with the game. I just know I'm seeing that it's selling well. So, hey, that's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. What about the rest of you guys? I don't know if you've kept up with the story. What do you think about the prospect of a re-review when your review was not very popular?
I think that whatever you review should stay as is, unless like what you said, unless there was a review in proc, which was they've done before. So, but I don't think you get a redo.
Yeah.
You know, just because even if you are getting ragged on by the greater community, number one, that is just the review is what that outlet or that person thought about that game at the time that they played it and what they played.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. And if anybody's angry at that, you know what? I think they need to grow up, because it's like, you know, no, it's because it's like review. People have different opinions, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes these things don't match up. You don't go fucking lynching Roger Ebert because he didn't like a fucking film. even though my man's dead. But still, like, review is a review, and that's all it is. It should just stand as is, whether it's a positive or a negative review. It is what that outlet or that person thought, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a snapshot in time. That's the way I always see reviews, you know?
Exactly. You know, like, if you, again, like, to use Roger Ebert or Siskel and Ebert, there are plenty of films that they have gave scathing reviews. But in hindsight, a lot of these films are seen as classic.
Yeah.
And these are films that we, like, you know, that everybody said, oh my God, this is a great film, but they didn't like it. But again, just because these people didn't like it, you know, just because those reviewers didn't like it, that doesn't mean, you know, that everybody's going to, only now people are getting all silly and stupid. Oh, I gave it a bad review. Oh no. Who cares? There are plenty of films, plenty of games that have had bad reviews, but they've did good numbers as far as sales. So
like Crimson Desert,
like Crimson Desert is currently doing. So it's like, okay, so it wasn't the reviewers did that. All it just means is the reviewers like it. That's why there's that separation where, like, all the audience seems to love it. All right, the audience loves it. The reviews don't reflect what the audience what the audience is going to think. So that's it.
Yep.
One thing that I want to note about this in particular, I kind of agree with Manny. I kind of agree with Manny. I don't completely agree though, because I have seen, you know, some reviewers re-review stuff after the fact. You know, sometimes opinions change. Sometimes, you know, they're in a different headspace, or in video game terms, they literally, games get fixed after months or years or days. So things change. If you're making a review and you want to review like a week or a month after the game comes out because of peer pressure, then yeah, that's not a good look. But I will say this, and the thing with this game, the conditions for this game were really particular, meaning folks got review codes, you know, not too far in advance for a game that takes 80 hours to complete at least.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure a lot of reviewers were in a tight crunch trying to get everything done so they can actually talk about the game. And I would venture to say most game reviewers didn't even get close to completing the games.
Nope. Very few of them did. You know, go ahead, Rich.
That is 1,000% correct, because if I recall correctly, this was sent out the week before GDC. Some people went to GDC and, you know, that obviously messed with the time they would have had where they could have devoted to just reviewing the game. So, yeah, it wasn't enough time. And by the way, it takes more than 80 hours to complete the game, Carlos, because I know some people who have put about 200 hours into this game and they still haven't finished the game. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Shout out to Jeffrey Wilson. I will read this comment. Obviously, longtime game reviewer and editor. I think it depends on the intention. If you're doing it because the angry fans, can't go out like that. I agree. You know, you can't be changing your mind because of people online. Again, I'm not against a re-review, but you got to give it time, bro. If you review a game in April and you want to revisit it in December, especially if they patched it, yeah. But that original review should still stay there as a snapshot, you know? So you could do both. You could have both. But yeah, changing the review because of fans, let's just be honest here. Who did that recently? Digital Foundry wasn't a review, but they changed their stance real quick about DLSS 5 after fans came at their ass, you know, because they were all like, oh, this is amazing. Blah, 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 blah. And then the next day, like, oh, yeah, we should have read the room. You know, my thing is like, no, your original thing that you said is actually the one you felt, because they were looking at it. I know I'm kind of going off topic here. They were looking at it from the tech side. Yes, it is impressive. But when they saw the gamers, they're like, oh, we're idiots. We didn't see it that way, you know? But that goes to my point. It's like you flipping and flopping that quickly doesn't look good, you know? Go ahead, Manny.
I think the thing about it is, like, also with the Digital Foundry situation is they didn't ask the right questions at the time.
Yeah.
They got wowed by a couple of seconds, by a little bit of footage, and they really didn't say, hey, wait a minute, what are these changes really doing? it didn't ask those questions. They just waxed and waned about it and didn't really and weren't objective about what they were seeing. For this thing, I would just I think that you could set it up to where like you, hey, like, you know, Crimson Desert, you know, after 80 hours, they could do something like that. IGN make a whole new feature. But yeah, I think that their review should just stay as, because again, like we shouldn't, it like what Jeffrey was saying is like, what we're going to do a redo because the hornet's nets got a little rattled. Fuck it. No,
yeah,
don't do that. No, if you're going to go through, make a featurette or something like that where you've actually played the whole game and, you know, and do it that way.
Yeah.
You
know? All right. Anybody else want to jump in on this? All right. We'll move on here. Let's talk about some Nintendo news and, perfectly enough, Chris leaves. Where did Chris go? Like, I know he was here. Who's they?
Sort of another story for PlayStation. And that's why a lot of the
stuff. But I'm not talking. Yeah, but can I?
No, but I'm saying like. Go ahead.
Can I finish the intro? PlayStation had the price hike recently. Xbox had one before that. PlayStation had one before that. Who's been the holdout? Nintendo, right? Nintendo hasn't raised a price yet. But you know, if this new report is to be believed, seems the inevitable may happen. So this is from Nintendo Life. Former Nintendo sales lead thinks Switch 2 price hike is quote unquote inevitable. There's so many outside forces that are kind of forcing their hand. I agree with that. Let me read this real quick. With the PlayStation 5's price increase going into full effect today, lots of us are concerned about the rising cost of video games in general. Xbox has already increased its Xbox Series X and S prices and Game Pass prices, but the Switch 2 has remained static since launch last year. But in an interview with the Kit and Krista podcast, a former Nintendo sales lead simply referred to as Sean believes that, unfortunately, quote unquote, Nintendo will eventually have to increase the price of the console. Is speculating on the potential of a price increase. Sean believes that there's things that they can and seem to be doing to try to mitigate that. But I also look at this move as a way to make a hardware price increase a little more palatable. We talked about that. Basically, they're lowering the price of digital games, and he's saying he thinks they're doing that to make the pain a little bit more bearable when they raise the price of the console. You know, oh, Chris, perfect timing. We're talking about a report that came out speculating that it's inevitable that the Switch 2 price will go up. And I just read a part right now where the guy that was being questioned on this podcast says that he believes, and it's all speculation from his part, but he was a former Nintendo sales guy, that they're lowering the prices of digital games as a way to kind of ease the pain of console prices, you know? So what do you think about that, Chris? What do you think about the eventuality of Nintendo Switch price going up? Again, PlayStation already did it. Xbox did it. Nintendo's the only holdout.
I 100% believe that. I said already they were going to raise the price. Their RAM prices went up regardless of what's happening now. When market shifts happen, either up or down, and companies correct, especially big companies like Nintendo, once they make a move like that, or once they mention that, that is going to happen. And even if DRAM comes down, right, even if they get their same deal back for what they were getting the prices were last year, I doubt those prices will come down. So I 100% believe them. I believe they were already planning this, and they were just trying to massage it. And that's perfect. I think he nailed it, because I was trying to think, like, are you just going to raise everything? Like, are you going to keep your game prices high, and you're going to increase the price of the hardware when you're not giving anything? So that makes total sense why they cut the price of the digital game down. And they're gonna couch it like, oh, look, we're giving you such a discount. And then, yeah, they're going to announce probably in a month that the hardware prices are going to go up. So yeah. I think he's right. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with him. And then he adds this part. This is another one, too, because it's not just RAM. There's something else going on in the world right now. And this is what he says. When oil goes through the roof, that's not just shipping. That's not just shipping costs that go up. There's other things that people may not realize. Helium is a byproduct of producing oil. Helium is a key and unreplaceable ingredient in making semiconductors, which means hardware prices go up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's right about that, too.
Well, oil is also used to make plastic.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There you go.
Manufacturing goes up. Helium is also used for cooling. Super cooling. So yeah, in the semiconductor process, it's very important. And yeah. So there's a lot of factors in there, and people are hurting all around. Like this, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You raise the price of that hardware when you already have weak hardware sales, those sales are going to plummet. There's no way they don't.
Yeah. So you know now, how much does the Switch cost at the moment? Was it $450 or something? I could be wrong. I honestly don't know.
$450. If you got the Mario Kart code, it's what, $500, $499.
Fuck. Well, you know, with that, you know, my next question is, how much is it going to go up to?
Oh, no. Oh, Carlos.
Carlos, you're the Miss Cleo here. The tarot cards.
The tarot. I'm busting out the tarot cards.
That's it. Hey, man. I got to go to work. You will have to go to work for these consoles. Hey, man, I got three jobs. You three jobs, you lazy. We got nine.
Oh, man. Yo, the crazy thing is, and Chris, you got in at a good time because the portal just went up in price too.
Excuse me?
Oh yeah. So yeah. I saw that.
It went up $50. I think most everything that gets at least the recent price hike has been $50. So I'll say the same thing. I think the Switch 2 will be a 500. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
oh, I do man. Agree.
Wait, you mean $599?
$499.
It's $499
for the bare bones.
Wait, it is. I thought it was $450. Okay, wait.
No, that's the bare bones.
Yeah.
They sell two bundles. The SKU with the Mario Kart is $499.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think that'll be $550.
$550, yeah. Or you? What about $600, bro?
I'm gonna say it's $599. I think we're gonna go for it.
It's quite possible. I wouldn't put it past them.
$549, $599.
Yeah. Man, the regular average Joe is being priced out of gaming, man. I have something else to say about this, but I want to
price out of everything.
Fuck, man, electricity.
I filled my car up today. That shit was $60.
Oh shit. Yeah.
I bought my regular ass groceries. I'm like, why is this shit more expensive? Bruh. Yeah. Any other speculations? There's something I want to say about this to certain people.
Who people?
Actually, I'm going to say it. Actually, before that, what? Manny, what were you saying about PlayStation?
Oh, no. I was just saying because what happened is that because the you know, obviously says that the date, it already had the due date when the price was going to go up. They actually did have pretty decent sales. And they were sold out in a bunch of different places.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was getting them PlayStations.
Getting their PlayStations up before the price jumped. But yeah, that's pretty much all I was saying.
Okay. I get the mix up because you thought I was going to talk about Sony. No, it's a Nintendo story. But but the Sony thing leads me to the point I wanted to make because it's related. I don't know what the right word is. It's because I'm not surprised by this. But I'm also kind of like embarrassed. Let's go with embarrassed. It's very embarrassing to see so-called gamers on Twitter right now justifying the price hike, bro. They're saying this is good. These are premium consoles. We should be paying these companies more. What the fuck kind of mentality do you have to like stand for a fucking company that doesn't give a fuck about you, you know? But I'm just going to say, I know why they're doing this, right? These are people, and I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just being honest. These are people that tied their identity and their self-worth to these systems, right? So any slight on the console is a slight on them, and they must defend their honor, or in this case, PlayStation's honor. Oh, I don't like it that they're saying, that they're talking all this bad stuff about PlayStation. I need to justify it. Let me go to ChatGPT and post a 3,000 word fucking essay on Twitter about why this is justified. I wish I was making this up, by the way. Dudes are writing novels about this shit. You know, I'm like, what are we doing right now, bro? Like, are you honestly happy that you have to pay extra? You probably don't give a fuck. Oh, I got my PlayStation. I'm good. What about the guy behind you, bro? What about the guy who's been waiting for that PlayStation? I want to play Wolverine. I want to play whatever, right? Fuck that guy. I got my PlayStation. You know, it's fucked up. You know, like that kind of thinking is not good. And I've seen too much of that this week. People justifying it, you know, or saying, oh, PlayStation's going to be just fine. Just fine. Yeah. What other choice do you have? You know, like an Xbox, maybe Nintendo's a different thing. Like you're going to see PlayStation this is what I predict. PlayStation sales are going to go down this holiday, which like they did last holiday, but they're still going to be the number one selling console. But dudes are going to then turn around and say, oh, look, they're still in top. Yeah, but they fucking lost too, bro. You know, so I just had to get that off my chest. It's very that's the word. Very upsetting to see this shit. You know, people justifying this shit. It's insane. I even saw one dude blocking people that were posting about this. You know, like, how did we get to a point where people are justifying console price hikes? Something we've never seen before, you know? Please tell me if I'm wrong. Please tell me, please point to me a time in history where console prices went up. 5 years after the fact. It didn't happen, by the way. I'm just asking, you know, I'm just throwing that out there. But these people are fucking crazy. Yeah, it's a rhetorical question. But my point is, sum it up, these people are fucking retarded. You know? Yeah. Go ahead, Carlos.
I don't understand where it comes from.
Yeah. Man, you go after Carlos.
Yeah,
go ahead,
I feel like a lot of this is, you know, it's tied up with what you mentioned, Tony, that's the fanboyism where you're in a tribe and you're defending your tribe. But also, a second portion of that is a lot of the people that are screaming the loudest can't afford overpriced consoles because that's all they do. So whenever you don't see the ramifications or at least the hurt
ramifications, some of these prices, dude,
it's like when you don't see the consequences to some of the stuff, it's like it doesn't affect you. So you're like high home about it.
That's a good.
It's point. Like you know, I could mention another topic, but, you know, I won't mention it here. But, you know, and so that's why they're saying that. It's like they feel comfortable in their ivory tower, you know, putting the plate in their PlayStation. And it's like, oh, well, if it goes up to a grand, that's fine. They're still making money, you know. So I think it's a lot of that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with that. Yeah, Manny, what were you going to say?
No, I mean, that's fine. Yeah. What you guys are saying, I agree with what has just been said.
Rich, I want to get your thoughts on this. Not only the Nintendo price hike, which we know is going to come, but then these idiots on fanboys defending this stuff.
Repeat that last part. I also received a quick call.
Uh-oh, damn, everybody's in call tonight.
Yeah, I'm good now.
Yeah. Price hike. Basically, people justifying these price hikes.
Well, Nintendo definitely is going to raise the price. You know, Sony already has raised the price of the PlayStation 5. I heard a rumor that Carlos is definitely going to be picking up a Pro very soon because he absolutely needs to get the best that he can out of GTA 6. So there you go. But no, I think it's ridiculous that people are like, I guess the people that are justifying this, can they actually afford to get these consoles, or are they just looking for something to complain about online?
That's what it is. Well, they're not complaining about the price hike. They're upset at you for, you know, not being okay with the price hikes. That's what their problem is. They're saying, this is good. This is a good thing. Sony's a premium company. You need to pay more. That's insane. Yeah, no, they're crazy. Brian, get in here, man. What are your thoughts, bro?
Again, it's as you said, it's just like the Sony price hikes, and when they announced $70 games, it's all of a sudden, oh yeah, we are happy to pay for this. It's like, I understand the sentiment, but at the same time, like, you should be happy to pay more. I mean, if you're happy to pay more, then just buy another console for the fun of it. You know? Like, so yeah, it's just dumb. It's dumb logic on all sides. And I think these people, you just need to stop. And it's that term that I'm not a fan of, but I think these guys are just bootlickers.
That's a great term, though.
I have to say, I mean, come on. I mean, who here is happy to pay more for the things that they have, honestly? Insane. Like, I'm still mad that iPhones cost over $700. And I know that iPhones haven't cost $700 for years, because that's how mad I am. You know, it's, so, yeah.
Don't tell them what they actually cost.
Oh, man. Just, every year is just worse. But it's just the idea that why are you happy to pay more for the same stuff anyway? And especially now, I'm starting to feel like these companies are just using any excuse to justify a price rise. Regardless of if it is actually affects the bottom line, they just say that, oh yeah, no, it does affect the bottom line, hence we're upping the price. And it's like, does it really? Or are you saying that just to have an excuse to up the price? Because I feel like some companies, well, most companies are just saying, we'll up the price because we feel like it. And mm-hmm. we have a reason that we can say why, rather than it actually being a reason. So yeah it just makes me sad. And yeah, I honestly don't know where things are going with this, because if next-gen consoles are around the corner, as some people are talking about, I honestly have no idea how much they'll cost. And no matter what they cost, that'll be the new standards going forward. So that'll be even worse, because then the next-gen will be 50% of that. And I just don't want to see a world where the cheapest console is $1,000.
Shit. Yeah. Man.
I'm with you, Brian. The whole thing, it's like we talked about it. I think it was during the question show. It's like, what's leading to all these price hikes? And it's like, it's a combination of pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the crazy part, you know, to go back to Sony is, you know, we know that the pro version of consoles usually release at the same price as the previous version of their console. So the PS4 Pro costs, I think, $400, the same price as the PS4. And then the PS4 went down in price. And that's how they sold it. This, the PS5 Pro, it came out, you know, the PS5 came out at what? At
$499.
$400 and $500?
Yeah.
So, and you know, $500 was the expensive one with the disc drive. And the PS5 Pro, when it released, it came out $200 more expensive than that. And it's gotten two price hikes since then. Two! Yeah. It came out at $699. Now it's what? $899?
$899. And Carlos, that's without a disc drive.
Yes. And it's usually like things go down in price because they're not, you know, paying for the R&D that they did to generate this new console, and usually the parts get cheaper throughout time, get smaller. Nope. I mean, they are getting smaller, but they're getting way more expensive and way more. It's ridiculous how much more. And it sucks, man. I don't know. Like, we're talking about, you know, gamers being priced out. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen to a subset of gamers that are going to get priced out from, you know, these next-gen games.
The price of consoles are too damn high. It's crazy.
Too damn high.
All right. Let's move on here. Another Nintendo story. This one's funny. Remember that Nintendo patent that they tried to pull? You know, it's like summoning monsters and shit. Now, originally, you know, the U.S. Patent Office, you know, greenlit it. Like, yeah, that's fine. And then, like, very quickly, you know, lawyers in America are like, yo, this is fucking stupid. What are we doing here? Thankfully, it seems cooler heads have prevailed. And now the U.S. Patent Office has rejected the patent. The fight isn't over yet, but the fact that they rejected it, that's a good thing, because this was stupid to begin with, because it'll just encompass everything. There's so many games that we could summon shit. You know, Nintendo was literally trying to do what Gene Simmons would try to do when he tried to, you know, patent OJ. You know, like, bro, what the fuck? You know, let me read this real quick. This is also from Nintendo Life. Nintendo has been hit with another blow in its ongoing legal battle with Palworld, as the U.S. Patent Office has rejected its controversial summon character and let it fight Pokemon patent. According to games, I know, man, it's so stupid, fucking Nintendo. According to Game Phrase Florian Mueller via VGC, the non-final rejection, remember, this is not finalized yet, meaning Nintendo has 2 months to respond or more if it chooses. The U.S. Patent Office has rejected all 26 claims made in the patent, which essentially revokes it unless Nintendo chooses to respond. This follows the Patent Office's Director John Squire order for the patent to be re-examined 2025, which is an extreme rare thing. Yeah, because the initial ruling was retarded. of the 15,000 X part examinations requests in 1981, only 175 have been granted. Damn. The Mueller report reports that the patent was revoked without the need to play or even look at a single game at this based on a prior art reference from U.S. patent. Yeah, this is fucking stupid. So, you know, hopefully Nintendo won't try to come back, but anyway, we'll see what happens. Chris, what are your thoughts on this, man, as our resident Nintendo, you know, news guy?
Well, this is great news because the patent was ridiculous. The fact that they were able to get that approved, I don't know who was smoking crack rocks at the time, this was fine, because there's games way before Pokemon that did that shit, capturing creatures or whatever, all that stuff has been done, and they didn't come up with it, right? So the fact that they were able to patent it, and just filed, by the way, they filed that after they started a lawsuit with Palworld. So trying to use a retroactive, everything about this whole thing with them trying to get, what was it, Pocket Pair, or I forgot the guys who make Palworld, to try to drag them through a legal process to ruin them, right? That's all this is. Yeah. And the fact that they were able to retroactively use a patent to sue them, which they didn't have the patent until after the lawsuit, is ridiculous. The fact that Japanese law allows that, insane. But can't do anything about that. But thankfully, like you said, sanity has come back. They lost the patent. Good. I hope they don't get it back, and I hope they lose that case. That's the next step. That'll be some justice right there. They need a chin check real bad, and that will be it. I hope Palworld wins that case, and they go back. And you know what? Stick to making games and stuff, and worry about your damn console, right? And let everybody else, make games and play the fucking game.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that part. It's like they literally just did this to, you know, crush Palworld. It wasn't like their end goal was for them to, concede. They didn't do that, you know, because that tactic has worked with them before. But yeah, no, this is good news for sure. We'll obviously keep an eye on this, but yeah, good stuff. All right, so what about canceling? This one's interesting. Apparently, The Last of Us Online was 80% done before it got shelved. And apparently the director found out that it was being canceled 24 hours before it was announced that it was canceled, which is crazy. So he was on some podcast talking about this. So I'm going to read what he said. Basically, at one point, a decision had to be made. Okay, make this game or make the next game that Neil Druckmann was directing, the president of the company. And so kind of naturally, you can understand what happened there. They had to pick the game that was kind of the bread and butter of the studio rather than this experimental game that I was working on that I believe was going to be really big. He's talking about the online game. But unfortunately, they couldn't see the light of day. That was a devastating moment for me because I spent 7 years working on that game and it was soul crushing. I remember honestly finding out that it was getting canceled 24 hours before it was announced to the public. That's how I find out about the game getting canceled. And it was just unfortunate that they had to do that because they have to control the messaging. That's some wild shit, you know? But again, 7 years making this shit, bro? Really? Like, how long did the first online version take to make? I doubt it was that long, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's at that point, it was already all time. No online thing should be take that long to be honest.
It should.
It defeats the whole point of one of those things where you release, you know, something. It has a small investment, small time. I can see why they probably shouldn't even have done it, started down that path in the first place.
Yeah. But, you know, I got to read this part because this is interesting because this is a story we always keep talking about. The guy's name is Agarwal. Agarwal also gave some insights into Sony's misguided, I'm reading from Kotaku, by the way, gave some insight into Sony's misguided live service pivot, which he says the company started pushing around. Ooh, what year was that? 2020, at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, as online games became a way for people to connect with their friends while quarantining their homes. As restrictions have loosened in the years that followed, people aren't playing online games as much as they were, and as such, all that investment into forever games was pulled back. The combination of that and a weighing of Naughty Dog's internal resources led to The Last of Us Online being canceled. So we've heard this a million times before. They got all this COVID money. They started investing in shit. And then when the money dried up, all these things started getting canceled. Oh, man. I know nobody on this podcast is surprised to hear that. You know, that shit is crazy. But I agree with you, you know, but man, it's the usual story. Oh, look at all this money we have. Let's go. You know, we're always going to get this amount of money. This will always be, this is the new normal.
No, they should have never, they should have.
Insane.
They should have done a couple of those things, but then after that, they should have really not invested in this. Anybody could have told them that with something like Fortnite and all those things that were out at the time that already had the zeitgeist, you think that people are going to make any room to play a Last of Us online game? That first one, they even have the numbers on it, didn't do that amazing. Uncharted, yeah. Like, they did fine for what they were, but they really weren't a thing.
Yeah. It's crazy. I know some people are looking forward to this, but there again, why is this online game taking so long to make? You know,
yeah, 7 years. That's 7 years. That's more than a development time for a triple A game.
Yeah,
for a normal triple a single player game.
Yeah, which is way more
about five.
And you know what else took 8 years? Our favorite Sony live service game, Concord.
Yeah. So every single one of these things, they had all these games that were essentially sucking resources. We could have had a legitimate amount of games, you know, of first party titles in this thing. And yeah, okay, you toe dips into the online space. I can understand that you want to have those things open, right? But not every single studio should be working on that. Fucking Bluepoint shouldn't have been working on that. The Naughty Dog shouldn't have been working on it. There's all these situations. They utterly fucked up.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anybody else want to chime in on this? Go ahead, bro.
I do have one comment to say or one question to ask. Can we add this unofficially to the Concordian timeline?
I will. You know, it may be the first Concordian.
It was a pre-Concordian.
Yep, that's it. The predecessor. But yeah, this, again, we've heard this story before, bro. It's crazy, you know? All right, I don't think...
Why did that game need a freaking multiplayer, man?
It didn't. I know some dudes, you know, again, the only reason The Last of Us, the original one, had a multiplayer is because that was the era of the tacked-on multiplayer. That franchise has no business having multiplayer. There's no need for it. Same thing with Uncharted. No point for that shit, you know? But it was just fucking Dead Space got tacked on multiplayer. Assassin's Creed, what do we do? Tomb Raider, you know? Like that. It was that era, bro. It was that era. Although Assassin's Creed multiplayer was not as bad as some of the others, but still, it didn't need to have it, you know? But it was that era. And then, ironically enough, you know, was it 7 years after the fact, then we get into the era of, like, let's throw money at everything because we got all this money from COVID. Fucking gaming industry can be dumb, man. I swear. Some of these executives, yeah, you know?
They really shouldn't have played the game. Like, all of a sudden, now we have more money, so now we're going to just, you know, no, they should have continued to do as they were going to do. Maybe put in a couple of new things in there, you know, but they should have never thought that was going to last. And just because everybody's Idiots. Out of their pandemic holes, all of a sudden things are all, we're all starting to start buying stuff. It's what you call a captive audience. There was nothing else there.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Carlos?
What people don't realize, at least when the executives don't, is players or gamers are stingy when it comes to multiplayer games.
Yeah,
they really like, you really need to do something different or something, or have an incredible hook to get these people to buy into your online experience. Because people are siloed into their Fortnites, into their, you know, League of Legends and all those, every type of multiplayer game that already has a fan base for a decade, over a decade. And if you're coming in with your bullshit Concords and your marathons, it's like you need to step your game up and do something that is gonna, you know, revolutionize the genre at this point, because people are just not gonna go to your stuff just because it's tacked on, you know. But back in the day, the reason why tacked on multiplayer worked is because people enjoyed the single player games. Tony, you mentioned a whole bunch of single player games that had good single players.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, like, you know, I love Uncharted, so I'm just going to play the factions. Oh, I love Tomb Raider. You know, might as well just try it out. I love Metal Gear. So I'm good. You guys tried Metal Gear Online and you guys don't play multiplayer like that.
Yeah, no, you're right. They did get people to at least try this stuff. Man, I can make Mass Effect. Remember that had 1, 2, Mass Effect 3. Many during that era, man. But you're right. That is, it's not, okay. They're basically saying, hey, man, you bought this game, try out the multiplayer. That is less egregious than here's just the multiplayer, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we don't talk about this enough. It's like people, if you're playing Fortnite, that's all you're playing. If you're playing Call of Duty, that's all you're playing. So these companies going, oh, we got to make a Fortnite. We got to make Call of Duty. What are you going to do to make those people that are playing those games that you're trying to copy leave their shit for your shit? And a lot of companies fail at this. You know, you have to do something very different. But they think, oh, we could copy the formula. But it doesn't work that way. You know, people are not, they're hesitant to leave a game that not only are they used to, you know, they don't need to get better at it. They're already good at it. And that their buddies are already on. It's a difficult transition. You know, it's like asking motherfuckers switch from Android to Apple. It's hard, you know?
I don't want them green bubbles.
I don't want the green bubbles, you know? But yeah, man, it's gaming industry is wild to me, bro. It's like these executives, man. Again, the older I get, the more I realize that dudes that are quote unquote highly educated are the biggest fucking morons, man. You know, the elite and shit, you know, and I even question that education, you know, what the fuck were you doing in school, motherfucker? You know, probably not studying, you know, because you're a fucking idiot, you know? Anyway, moving on here. Speaking about stupidity, Sony, so Sony Interactive Entertainment has acquired Cinemaverse Labs. I'm butchering that. They're bought an AI company, basically. Here we go. So I'm going to read this. This is a very, very short statement. This is from Sony Interactive Entertainment's website. At Sony Interactive Entertainment, the company behind the PlayStation brand, we are continually exploring new ways to push the boundary, the usual bullshit. Fuck. Today we, hold on, calm myself down. Keep this in context. They shuttered Blue Point, right? Because the market conditions. But they had enough money to buy this fucking company. Anyway, let me continue. Today we are pleased to announce that, you know, we have entered into agreement to acquire let me try to sound this out. It's hooked on phonics, motherfuckers. Cinemersive Labs, a UK-based machine learning and computer vision company. Following the acquisition, the Cinemersive Labs team will join us and contribute to our broader efforts in advancing state-of-the-art visual within gaming. This includes applying machine learning to enhance gameplay visuals, improve rendering techniques, and unlock new levels of visual fidelity. Like we said last week, right? There is a difference between generative AI and machine learning. If they're just going to do some old school DLSS shit, I love how I'm saying old school. I'm talking about the DLSS that existed a month ago. Actually, the one we still currently have. Regular DLSS shit, if they're going to do that, PSSR stuff, okay, fine. But if you're going to do DLSS 5 shit, I know Hip Hop Gamer may like it, but we won't, you know? But Manny, what's your thoughts on this? Especially the fact that they've shuttered so many studios and then they have enough money to do this shit.
Well, I mean, also the size of this company is only 8 people.
Oh, okay. So a small company. Okay. But that's not too bad.
It's a small company, but at the same time, it's like, okay, so what about this company said that, okay, that they needed to own this company?
Yeah.
And nothing that they could have developed internally. You see the big problem here. You know, there was a point when Sony used to do a lot of this stuff internally, but yet now they're loading up on these companies, these external companies to do what?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That does calm me down a bit. That it's a small company. They probably didn't spend a lot of money. Because I would have been mad if they spent a shit ton after laying off all those people. You know.
This is also a 2022 company, so they've only been around since 2022. So
yeah, But yeah, again, if it's just maybe they're trying to beef up PSSR machine learning, but that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't want that generative shit in there to make it look like Grace, you know, making her look like fucking Aubrey Plaza and shit.
So in general, at least from what their site, their things say, is they do new generation. They say tech for the new generation of VR and AR.
Excuse me?
Media.
PSVR 3?
Yeah, so it's some sort of it's some sort of machine learning development for, you know, at least for VR, at least from what they say here. But again, it's like, what about this company says that they need to load? They're looking at their, you know, a lot of their stuff is all on, you know, you can actually read up on them. They haven't had much growth. In fact, they have 20% they've been losing employees.
Oh, shit. So I don't know. So, yeah, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How much do you want to bet that somebody they know is the head of that studio?
Probably, right? Maybe it's Hassan.
No, maybe not Hassan, but maybe somebody from one of their other studios, you know, who possibly worked for PlayStation at one point. Maybe they want to acquire some sort of tech that they think that they can get out of it.
Maybe.
Who knows?
By the way, speaking of,
if he's still abandoned.
He probably is. Well, he abandons all his projects, you know. All right, and we're going to end the show off on good news. So we know about Shinji Mikami. He has a new studio called Unbound. And they've been acquired. Yep. Usually when you hear acquired, right? Like,
haven't been acquired.
Is that how it goes?
They're being published by what's those guys? The Shift Up.
Okay, so they need to redo their story here because it says Stellar Blade developer Shift Up has fully acquired Unbound.
I didn't know that. I thought they were just being publishers. All right.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, there you go. So yeah, Stellar Blade developer Shift Up has fully acquired Unbound, the Tokyo-based game studio founded by Resident Evil creator and Devil May Cry producer Shinji Mikami in 2022, the company announced. I'll read this statement real quick. This is from Gamatsu. Oh, I didn't know they were still around. Unbound is currently developing original console and PC-based properties targeting. Okay, this is just a press release. So yeah, interesting. You know, Shift Up definitely on the come up after Stellar Blade. So I guess they have enough money to do this, you know. And just like other companies, like, you know, they're actually like Eastern companies, they're doing very well, you know. They bought all their employees fucking Switch 2s and shit.
They bought Switch 2s, PlayStation 5s, and PlayStation 5 Pros.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I mean, you don't hear about that coming from other studios. They're not that don't seem that happy to have them around.
Yeah. So this is what the CEO of Shift Up says. This acquisition will serve as an opportunity to deliver the best gaming experience to users worldwide and further solidify Shift Up's global development competitiveness. Yeah, I mean, this having Shinji Mikami under you, man, that's pretty good. You know, legendary game developer. So that'll definitely help him out. What did Mikami say here? I'm very pleased to be partnering with Shift Up and all the employees. I sense strong synergy with the CEO, who is also an active creator. And I believe this is an ideal partnership that allows us to focus on creativity. Cool. Good stuff. Obviously, we'll need to see what games come out. But I'm down with it, man. You know what? Yeah.
In the announcement video, they were sort of teasing some sort of new title. Like if you watch the video, there's all these weird weird brain crap things that are all walking around their offices and these weird like things all coming out. So it's interesting to see obviously they're not far enough to announce exactly what they're working on, but I'm guessing those are kind of hints.
Yeah, so I'm down with it, man. Again, we don't know, but I consider it good news. All right, unless anybody else has anything to say about that. We can start wrapping up here. Manny, real quick, how was C2E2?
C2E2 was pretty good. It was great to meet folks and see, you know, talk to everybody. You know, it's just Chicago always treats me pretty well. So, yeah, you know, got to talk to folks, got to do some signings, did a couple commissions, people bought some prints, usual comic fare. But, thanks to everybody who showed up. I don't think it was anybody who listened to this show that did show up, but you know, if you are listening, thank you very much for coming by, Mike. And I will have further announcement as to what other shows I will be at. Unfortunately, I'm not so high in the hog where they instantly invite me to these things. I have to go into the lottery system just like everybody else that does one of these shows. But obviously, I'll keep you posted as what shows I will in the coming year.
Dun, dun, dun. And Rich, what's coming up on the Coalition this weekend?
Yeah, so first and foremost, a shout out to Mr. Adam Vail, the TV Terminal. Check out the TV Terminal on YouTube as well as on thecoalition.com. He's still reviewing some shows. And as I mentioned previously, I'm actually going to be reviewing another show with him soon. So definitely stay tuned if you're watching TV. Yeah, you want to check that out. As for the Coalition, I will also mention this. We will be recording the next episode of the Invincible Podcast this weekend. And yes, I finally will be on the show because the last 2 weeks, there's been all kinds of stuff going on. But yes, looking forward to it. It's going to be a very good discussion. So stay tuned for that. We'll be recording that on Saturday. And now, as for everything else in regards to the Coalition, as I mentioned earlier, it is a very, very busy gaming season that we are in the midst of. I will be talking about some things in the future that I will be getting access to. So you definitely want to stay tuned to thecoalition.com as well as the Coalition Gaming channel. One comment that I will make very, very quickly, though, is that I have started to play this Shinobi DLC. Ooh. That is coming out. Yeah, that's actually out tomorrow, I believe. So I will be definitely talking about that next. So stay tuned for that coverage at some point. But, man, that DLC is definitely a workout. I remember when I played that last game. It took a while. This I went right back into it. Yeah, you getting your money's worth with this DLC. That's all I'll say for right now.
That's what's up. And yeah, Rich, you mentioned it. I'll mention it again. Yes, the Invincible Podcast will return, and will be. Rich, you're coming back for a very appropriate episode, man, because you already know. You already know, man. I already had dudes messaging me last night. It's like, yo, this is top five of Invincible. And I may have to agree. This episode was fucking awesome. So you definitely want to stay tuned for that. It is sad that we only have like three more episodes to review after this. But, you know, always a good time there. So go make sure you check that out. Invincible is great, man. It's fantastic. What's going on? Well, we're doing the sign out, brother. You know, you missed the fucking show, but you could catch the replay. But yeah, man, that's going to do it for us. Make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter, subscribe on YouTube, join the Discord, and check us out on your favorite podcast app. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
He's out.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
And Brian Manjoma.
Like, Crimson Desert is five games in one, I swear.
I think you're underselling it.
I think it's maybe they'll add another one with DLC.
You know? those Brian, patches. So Brian, you're actually playing Crimson Desert?
Yes, I am.
All right, we're extending the show a little bit. I want to get Brian's thoughts right now. What do you think of it?
Oh.
Cool. Shout out to Brian, man. Give him respect. For you, we're extending the show, bro.
All right. Okay. I have to admit, a lot of people are correct about the first 3, 4, 5 hours.
Yeah.
It is something to get through. And yeah, when Tony said that they throw a lot of mechanics at you, he is not wrong. It is like a lot of things to keep in mind. I mean, it's like every 10 minutes, like, oh yeah, we have this mechanic and we have that mechanic. We have this mechanic. It's like, here's a helmet you can see souls with. It's like, why? I don't know. Like, you can see, my mind is going blank because I can't remember all the things they throw at you. But again, there's crafting, there's potions, there's horse riding, there's capturing wild horses. That's a thing for some reason. You can pet your horse. You can pet and pick up random cats who become your companions. Why? Because the game thought, why not? So there's so many things to keep in mind. Like, even the combat, it's like, okay, you have unarmed combat. You have sword and shield. You have, I guess, staff weapons, you call it? Mm-hmm. Staff weapons. You have long swords or two-handed swords, and then you have all these abilities, and then you have so many things. So it is really tough to get through, but once you do, and you go at it in your own pace, yeah, the game is really good. I think I'm like 20, 30 hours in, and I'm only on chapter 4 still, because I just love walking around doing all the random quests and seeing random things. As I said last time, I got roofied by some kids in a forest, and now they're making infinite arrows for me. So it is really nice how... I think the best way to describe this is Breath of the Wild HD.
Interesting.
Yes. With no weapon degradation.
Yeah, no. You could sharpen your weapons, but it's not. They're not going to break. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, because it just has that Breath of the Wild feel where there's always just something around the corner and you don't know what it is. So you just like to go there and explore. And again, I found, oh my gosh, I found this one rock or this one like mound where everything there just kills you. And it's amazing. It's like, and the best part is that it's really close to like the first place you go to. So if you are just exploring, then you end up just dying. It's like, it has, yeah, why does bismuth kill you? I have no idea. And it makes no sense. And it's just like this giant rock. It has all everything that's growing on this rock just kills you. And then you get to the top, there's plants. The plants just kill you. I don't know why yet, but I'm sure that there's a reason. But I really like that. It feels like I'm just discovering things, and it makes a lot of sense, but only after you've played a while, which is one of the biggest things I hate when people say, oh yeah, the game gets good after 10 hours.
Yeah.
This is one of those games. Like, it only gets good after the first 5 hours, which is frustrating because it means that you need to sit through 5 hours of, okay, let's get things going, get things started, like do nonsense fetch quests to introduce you to all the mechanics, and then you can actually start playing the game. But so far, I'm definitely enjoying it. The bosses are really fun. Some of the most fun I've had in a long time. And the puzzles, I like how the puzzles are just not afraid to be puzzles, and they don't really tell you how they work.
Oh, they
just
don't.
Kind of go there, and then you just kind of expect, not to guess, but to figure it out. Because I don't know what the names are, but it's one of those puzzles that where you slide the tiles to get the picture right.
Yeah.
I just came across one of those, and I thought, okay, let me just move stuff around. And it's like, oh, now I see what they're trying to get me to do. There was like another one where if you light up certain lanterns, then it opens up the door to the treasure. Again, it didn't tell you. It just had like a closed door and some lighting or some lanterns on either side. So I thought, okay, let me just light them. And then the thing just opens. It's like, okay, you're telling me if I see this door, there's a lanterns somewhere, light the lantern, open the treasure chests. It's really nice, you know. You don't have some random sidekick telling you what to do all the time. So, yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it. Again, it's those first couple of hours, man. They're just they're frustrating. Like if they had better first 5 hours and the story was actually interesting with some interesting characters, yeah, this would be one of the best games made in a long time. Because I'm sure Tony had the same expression where I don't know who these guys are and I don't know why I should care about finding them. And when I do find them, I'm like, you have a name, but you look exactly like the other guy and you sound exactly like the other guy. So I have no idea who you are and I have no idea what your personality is. Like, you can say your name is John or Robert or whatever your name is. who are you? So yeah, they should fix that. But apart from that, everything else is really good.
I know you're only 30 hours in, but how would you compare it to The Witcher 3? Because that's what it more reminded me of, to be honest.
It's a case of Witcher 3 definitely a lot more interesting, a lot more focused. Witcher 3 has better side quests, hands down. These side quests are, they're standard video game side quests. Like, oh yeah, you go here, see a thing, and that's it. Whereas Witcher 3, the side quests actually felt like you were going down it felt like a story being told. Well, weird enough. Hmm. It felt like a story being told and you're following through that story. Whereas here, it just feels like things to do and you don't really feel the narrative aspect of the side quests in Crimson Desert. So, yeah, yeah, Witcher 3, better overall story, better side quests, but they still have the same ideas in that you're rewarded for exploring, you're rewarded for being prepared, and there's always just cool things to find. So the world is still good. But yeah, it's not topping Witcher 3. Witcher 3 is a hard thing to top, in my opinion. Hmm. But Crimson Desert definitely does try. And again, if they fix the first couple of hours and had a better story, then I think it could compare to it. But it's not Witcher 3.
Yeah. You think they were trying to, like, copy some of that, though?
Tough question. Copy? Possibly.
Or inspired, I say that, you know?
See, I say that as I got my horse on a roof of a hut, so I thought that was funny. But yeah, definitely inspired by it, because it's hard not to be. But again, just weren't inspired by the right things in The Witcher 3. I think they were inspired by just the atmosphere of things, as well as how you can explore the world. But I do believe that they were more inspired by Breath of the Wild, in how the world works, in that, again, you can traverse different places. You have a glider, because of course every game has a glider these days. again, you can tame wild horses and ride them. You can pick up so many things which are useless half the time. So I think they were inspired more by Breath of the Wild. But yeah, I can sense that there's some Witcher 3 inspiration here and there.
All right, good stuff, man. Listen, man, anytime we get a chance to talk about good video games, sir, we will. So thank you for that review. All right.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
Just a quick question for Brian. So you said you're 20, 30 hours in into the game. What percentage of the game do you feel like you've completed, at least from an overall standpoint, not a main story standpoint?
It's hard to tell. I'm still technically in the first region, because there's about five regions. Again, okay, keep note that it's not because I don't know how large the game is, but the reason why it's taking me this long is I tend to walk everywhere just so I can explore a bit more, and I try to avoid the fast travel when I can. So that's why my time will always be a lot more than other people. Because again, if you do the horse or you fast travel a lot, I am sure that you can get to where I am in two-thirds of the time, maybe even half the time. So there's that. I just like to walk. So my time will just be spent just walking around, seeing what's there. And plus, I get to learn the map that way. Because I think now I can probably traverse most of the first area without the map, because I've just gone through and explored that much.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. In terms of what I've seen, I have not reached the titular Crimson Desert yet. So there's that, and then the snow area. I guess in terms of storyline, I've just finished beating the Reed Devil boss recently.
That motherfucker.
Fun-ass boss.
That took me like 3 days to beat. That thing was crazy. Because again, the game doesn't tell you shit. I didn't realize on the way up to the mountain, you have to destroy those pillars. The game doesn't tell you that. So I fought all those guys nonstop, right? And I completely depleted all my health. So then I had to go back to down, get some chicken, you know, and vegetables, cook some food. Then I was like, I learned I could destroy the pillars and shit. And then the actual battle itself was crazy. Brian, by the way, you're not that far from where I stopped playing. I got to the beginning. It's either the end of chapter 4 or beginning of chapter 5. And it's not a spoiler because you've seen this. Not you, but you've seen clips of this. A giant gorilla monster. That's the boss where I got stuck at. And that's where I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like, reviews due tomorrow. I think this is it, you know? Had to hit that deadline, you know? But that was so. Your 30 hours is actually accurate, because I played the game. I'm not going to say I rushed it, but I did try to do as much as possible. I didn't walk around. I took a horse, obviously. And at least the version I played, there was no fast traveling. You got that shit in an update. You got lucky, you know? Like, for me, there would be fast travel at some point, but most of the time it was not available. It would tell you no fast travel right now. I'm like, okay, we're taking a long way.
Yeah, I heard that they added a lot more fast travel spots in the patch. Yeah.
Oh. Like the main camp, Howling Hill. Now there was no fast travel when I played that shit. Oh, you got to go back to Howling Hill. All right, go back up. Brian, I didn't have to look at the map at that point. I'm like, I know where this is. I've been up here 50 fucking thousand times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but I'm glad you're liking it, man.
Yeah, and it's, I think the game looks really good. I like all the different effects and the wind looks and the nighttime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I think they've done a great job in what they've made. Again, it's not the best thing ever, but I think they've done a really good job. They definitely made a game, I can tell you that much. They may have made like three games in one, but yeah, they definitely did make a game, and I can tell that they had fun making it with all the random things you can do. I mean, I punched a tree down, and then I picked it up, and then used the tree to basically chop down another tree. Why? The game just lets you.
That's funny. All right, good stuff there. All right, man, now we are done, so we will see you on Sunday later.
Laters.